digital station for comedy, drama and entertainment. BBC Radio 4 Extra.
And now we begin Frances Stoner Saunders' revealing account of a moment in history and the poignant life of the lonely woman at the heart of the story. The Woman Who Shot Mussolini is read by Sinead Cusack.
Wednesday, the 7th of April, 1926. A glance. Duration, 1, possibly 2 seconds. In particle physics, an eternity. In history, the briefest of encounters, an infinitesimally small exchange. Two arms are raised. Benito Mussolini's, in the fascist salute. Violet Gibson's, in the levelling of a pistol. The distance separating these two people, who have never met, is approximately 8 inches. Close enough to breathe each other's breath. Murder can be a very intimate business. Violet, daughter of a peer, looks like a pauper. She's wearing a black dress, shiny with wear. Her grey-white hair is pinned up in an erratic bundle, with straggles that have fallen loose. She is very thin. Mussolini, son of a blacksmith, is dressed like a stockbroker. Butterfly collar, black tie, spats, overcoat with velvet-trimmed collar, clothes picked out that morning by his Jewish mistress, who had spent the night with him. Until she raises the pistol and aims it at Mussolini's face, it's been a normal fascist morning. At 8 o'clock, Quinto Navarra, Mussolini's valet, arrived at his apartment. Shortly after, they got into a black Lancia and were driven to Mussolini's office. His Excellency, the Prime Minister, Benito Mussolini, Il Duce, sat behind his desk, receiving his proconsuls and listening to their petitions. As the nuns at the convent where she is lodging will later testify, Violet rose at 6 and appeared veiled for Mass in the convent chapel. She went out after breakfast at 8:30 a.m. She was a little agitated, as if she was trying to control some inner emotion. In her right hand, which is tucked into a pocket, she carries a LaBelle revolver. In the left pocket of her spinsterly dress, she carries a large stone, concealed in a black leather glove, with which she will smash the windscreen of Mussolini's car should she need to shoot him in the vehicle. Benito Mussolini, whose muscles and extraordinary vitality are a delight to Lady Asquith, wife of the former British Prime Minister, has been photographed swimming, fencing, boxing, riding, cutting corn shirtless, his chest glistening with a sweat unimaginable for most of his political contemporaries. "Everyone who came to Rome wanted to have an interview with Mussolini," observed an American journalist. "To see him was as much a part of the long-planned trip to the Eternal City as it was to visit the ruins or to walk over the places where the heroes of antiquity had once walked. Women travelers dream of tea with Mussolini, though he doesn't drink it, except for chamomile, which he takes both orally and through the rectum as a palliative for his stomach pains." The tourists do not see the political prisoners, the castor oil, the manganello clubs, weighted with thick leather or lead, or the body of the murdered opposition leader, Giacomo Matteotti, left to rot in a ditch outside Rome, or the 3,000 dead and buried, bludgeoned or knifed or shot by fascist squads. On the walls of thousands of buildings, Mussolini's historic slogans are daubed in indelible black varnish. Credere, obbedire, combattere. Believe, obey, fight. Mussolini is always right. We shall shoot straight. Violet knows how to shoot a pistol, having once used one on herself. But her aim might be a problem, as the bullet she fired into her body a year ago, "I wanted to die for the glory of God," missed her heart and whizzed through her ribcage before coming to halt in her shoulder bone. At 9:30, Mussolini has driven the short distance from Palazzo Chigi to Campidoglio, the Capitol line. He gets out of the car at the foot of the wide, shallow steps leading up to the capital of the world, and ascends them at full tilt, leaving his personal secretary huffing and puffing behind him. This place is the centre, political, religious, administrative, of all Rome's. If Mussolini has his way, it will be the centre of the new Roman Empire. Violet approaches Campidoglio. Perhaps the large crowd gathered there draws her to the place. This is not on her itinerary for today, not the scene she has chosen for a fatal encounter with Mussolini. In her pocket is a tiny scrap of paper, the tip of the lip of an envelope, on which she has written Palazzo del Littorio, the address of the Fascist Party headquarters, where, according to the newspaper she has been reading, Il Duce will appear that afternoon. On Campidoglio, she approaches a tall bearded man and asks if the king is present. No, not the king. Mussolini. She threads her way through the crowd and positions herself by one of the two lampposts just outside the Palazzo dei Conservatori. Nearby are two uniformed policemen. Directly in front of her are the liveried marshals of the capital, in stiffly brocaded silk coats and plumed bicorn hats. Plainclothes secret agents are everywhere. She looks old and sad and bedraggled, with precarious spectacles. She stands in the golden section of this fascist tableau vivant, and nobody notices her. A jostled photograph shows Mussolini striding forward confidently, chest puffed out like a cockerel. The crowd is swaying forward to get a closer look. "Viva il Duce!" is the chant, which il Duce acknowledges with a salute. He stops less than a foot away from Violet. A crowd of students bursts into a chorus of the fascist anthem, Giovinezza. Mussolini turns his head slightly to acknowledge the students. According to one eyewitness account, the sound of the gun firing is like a stick thwacking a stone. Mussolini's saluting arm retracts, his hand clamps to his face, blood pours between his fingers, he staggers back one step, two, but he is still on his feet. He looks up, astonished, and his eyes settle on Violet, who is also astonished, just as she pulls the trigger again. Click. A misfire. The pistol hammer strikes, but nothing happens. The bullet has stuck in the chamber. Several seconds pass, in which everybody is suddenly and unnaturally fixed, held to their positions. Silence without, and within, the amplified thud of heartbeats. Then, uproar. Mussolini, once he realizes he is not dead, summons more composure than anybody else on the scene. "It's nothing. Everybody stay calm," he orders. And everybody panics. More screams from the crowd. "Don't be afraid," Mussolini commands. "I am here. This is a mere trifle." He is right. Violet's first bullet has nicked the bridge of his nose, removing a tiny divot of flesh. As Mussolini is being hustled away, Violet is set upon by the crowd, which, like flames of fire, leaps up into a frenzied rage, according to one excited report. This is now a massive brawl. Violet looks vacant, stunned. She does nothing, does not cry out for mercy or deflect the blows. Her rope of hair is loosened, adding to her dishevelled appearance. Her spectacles have been trampled on, and the holy medallions she was wearing round her neck, her protecting saints, have been yanked off. With great difficulty, the policemen drag her away from the scene before the crowd can tear her limb from limb. 15 minutes later, Il Duce reappears with a large plaster spread across his nose and cheeks, like an accidental butterfly. Once again, he addresses the crowd and calls for calm, but the people press forward, knocking down the barriers and surging around him. With difficulty, he is maneuvered towards his car, bundled into it and driven back to his apartment, where he can finally allow himself to be shocked. His mistress, Margarita, who has no idea of what has happened, is there to receive him. Violet has been taken into the courtyard of the Musée dei Conservatori. She is very confused. She stammers out her name and 2 addresses in Rome, then refuses to speak further. An hour or so later, when the square has been cleared and closed off as a crime scene, she is driven in a police car the short distance to the Mantellate prison, a vast complex on the west bank of the Tiber. She is seated in the back of the car, without handcuffs, between police superintendents Epifanio Panetta and De Bernardini, both of the political police. She remains silent. At the prison, she is received by the nuns who run the women's section. She is photographed, 2 mugshots, one in profile, the other straight on, next to a criminal identification number, 14967. Her cheeks are flushed, a sign of incipient swelling from the punches she has taken. There are scratches and cuts on her face. Her starched white collar is torn. The line of her mouth and lips is a thin horizontal, framed by 2 deep creases running down the inside of both cheeks. Her eyes are suffused with a kind of mist. Her gaze is both terribly resigned and painfully direct. She looks out as if at a porthole, beyond which lies the vast wilderness of the world. She is then fingerprinted, handed over to the nun jailers, who strip search her and confiscate her garter belt and hair clips. A search of her clothes turns up the little scrap of paper on which she has written Palazzo dell'Etorio. There is nothing else. No handbag, no money, no identity papers, no personal effects. Violet is then washed, taken to the infirmary, so that the cuts and swellings on her face and body can be attended to. Shortly afterwards, and still in the infirmary, Violet meets the men who will determine what will happen to her. The chief of police, the crown prosecutor, chief superintendent Panetta, and 2 investigating magistrates. There is an interpreter, because none of them yet know whether she speaks Italian. She replies falteringly to their questions, in English with a light Irish accent, giving some personal details, and confirming that she has been in Rome for some time. She tells them she tried to commit suicide last year, that she has not returned to England because she fears her family will put her into a lunatic asylum. She is shown the Lebel pistol, but says she doesn't know what has happened. She has never seen Mussolini before. The questions become more heated. I don't know anything. I don't remember anything. And then, with a look of surprise, Mussolini? Are you sure it was me?
Sinead Cusack was reading from The Woman Who Shot Mussolini by Frances Stoner Saunders. It was abridged and produced by Jill Waters and is a Waters Company production.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 3 o'clock. Good afternoon. This is Luke Tuddenham. We continue our dramatisation of Elizabeth Gaskell's 1853 novel Ruth this hour, and abandoned Ruth Hilton must hide a dark secret. In an hour, Mel will be peeking into the history of the baseball cap on the 4 o'clock show. Then later, an ordinary day on the New York subway is disrupted when 4 armed men hijack Pelham